Thought I'd start with a little ditty that's short, to the point, easy to remember, and I think there's a thought-provoking aspect to it. This is it. You may know it, I don't know. I've wept in the night for the shortness of sight that to somebody's need made me blind, but I never have yet felt a twinge of regret for being a little too kind. And it's true, isn't it? As we look back in our lives, it's the kind deeds that stand out so very often. Hopefully, things we've done that are kind, but maybe more often, things that other people have done to us. And sometimes it's the unkind things that we've done that linger long in our memories. If only I'd held my tongue. If only I'd been a bit more thoughtful. Sacrificed a little bit, then what good might have happened? Because a kind deed often doesn't cost very much, but they can be long-term repercussions. Could the lingering on, can't it, for years, even decades? I was struck by this incident. I don't know very much about the man, except that when he wrote these words, he was an old doctor looking back on something that happened when he was quite young. And this is his, in his own words, this is what he said. One day, a long hot day it had been too, I met my father on the road to town. I wish you'd take this package to the village for me, Jim, he said, hesitating. Now, I was a boy of 12, not fond of work, and was just out of the hayfield, where I'd been at work since daybreak. I was tired, dusty, and hungry. It was 2 miles into town. I wanted to get my supper, wash and dress for singing school. My first impulse was to refuse and to do it harshly, for I was vexed that he should ask after my long day's work. If I did refuse, he would go himself. He was a gentle, patient old man. But something stopped me. One of God's good angels, I think. Of course, Father, I'll take it, I said heartily, giving my scythe to one of the men. He gave me the package. Thank you, Jim, he said. I was going myself, but somehow I don't feel very strong today. He walked with me to the road that turned off to the town. As he left, he put his hand on my arm, saying again, thank you, my son. You've always been a good boy to me, Jim. I hurried into the town and home again. When I came near the house, I saw a crowd of farmhands at the door. One of them came to me, the tears rolling down his face. Your father, he said, fell dead just as he reached the house. The last words he spoke were to you. And then the conclusion. I'm an old man now, but I have thanked God over and over again in all the years that have passed since that hour that those last words were, you've always been a good boy to me. And I found that quite touching. And I was trying to think, well, why? And I thought, well, maybe two or three reasons. One is that I have a father. And I think, well, have I been the ideal son? I don't think I have. At times, anyway. And now I've got children. And you sometimes wonder, well, what will be the last words that they say to you or you say to them? But I think maybe the thing that really touched me most was how much can hang on one little incident. Because he wanted to speak roughly to his dad, but he was somehow restrained. Instead of being unkind, he did the kind deed. And it meant so much. For years afterwards, he remembered those words. So kindness is crucial. And it's the practical expression of love. 1 Corinthians 13, the key chapter on love. But verse 4, love is patient and kind. That's the beginning, isn't it, of Paul's description of love. And there are two sides in that verse. Love is patient and kind. I've described it as the receiving and the giving. It's patient. Love is patient. That's receiving. The way I look at it, I wasn't here last week, so I don't know what was said. But I see it like this, that under great provocation, love can't be overwhelmed. It's strong. It's resolute. It's muscular. It bears all manner of ills. You throw what you like at it, besiege it with hostility and antagonism, those nasty words we sometimes get, barbed comments, hurtful actions, willful, I will have what I want kind of behavior. And what does love do? It's patient, bearing the pain. The love that's inside won't overreact. It won't blow up. It continues steadfast. Love is patient. But also, the other side, love is kind, which is where we're getting to. So there's not only the standing firm, the resolutely soaking up the nastiness and the aggression, the unfair words and deeds, but there's also a moving out. Love is kind. Love inevitably, inexplicably, almost irrationally, love pours forth kindness. And you could define kindness perhaps as love in action. Is the love, well, here's a question. Is the love inside of you irrepressible? You can't keep it in. It has to come out. You can't help but be kind. That's a pretty tall order, really. But that's really the true Christian, I think, or what it should be, the ideal Christian. Because we're filled with the Spirit of God, we're empowered by a new nature, we've been radically transformed, and so there should be this explosion of love inside of us which manifests itself in kindness. It's one of the fruit of the Spirit, isn't it? And it's inevitable. Now, is it obvious to those around? I can't really make him out. She's an enigma. They're so excessively kind. Do you ever baffle your friends? They scratch their heads, perhaps. Why is he so kind? Well, we read, don't we, in Galatians chapter 5. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness right there in the middle, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So to be a Christian is to have God's Holy Spirit within me, and the consequence should be that fruit, supernatural fruit. And in particular, we're thinking about kindness. I don't know if it's even possible, if we're true Christians, we should inevitably be kind, because we should have the Holy Spirit and the fruit of the Spirit within us. But let's just briefly, or maybe not quite so briefly, but look at that parable we read. Now, as we look through the verses, or some of the verses, in the back of our minds, I'd like us to be thinking about, well, what does it mean to be kind? How do I know if I'm kind? Do I just think I'm kind, or am I actually kind? What's the essence of kindness? Well, this man is set upon, isn't he? Verse 30, a man was going from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now, those men were after what they could get. And the thing that never struck me before was this thing about his clothes. They seemed to have taken most of his clothes. And then they beat him up, leaving him half dead. And you think, well, why did they need to beat him up? Again, when I was a child, never really thought that one through. You just sort of accept that he was beaten up. But maybe he put up a fight. But I reckon he was beaten up just for the fun of it. That's what you get. Even the other day, do you remember a few weeks back? There was a big thing on the radio, certainly. And the media seemed surprised that they discovered that muggers on our streets in London or wherever they were, these muggers, they didn't just mug you because they needed the money. They were desperately poor. But they actually did it for the thrill of it. It was actually something they enjoyed. And it's true, isn't it? We live in a wicked world. And they're wicked people about. And in a sense, that's quite encouraging as far as kindness goes, because we won't be at any shortage of opportunity to show kindness, will we? Because there's plenty of hurting people out there. Victimized people, needy people, so much pain and heartache and disappointment because of sin. So without kindness, what sort of world would we have? Well, by chance, we're told, verse 31, this priest came by, and I guess the man would have thought, great, you know, a priest is at the top of the religious hierarchy, but he doesn't even come near. Here's a man in the temple, offering sacrifices, showing God's love, and yet in his personal life, there's no evidence at all of love and kindness. Sorry, mate, I can't help. Maybe it was too risky. Or he didn't have the time, or he's afraid of defiling himself. What would happen? Surely, a catastrophe. Suppose the man had actually died in the priest's arms. Well, what would that mean? Well, we're told in the Old Testament, whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. So his religious service would be compromised. He couldn't offer any more sacrifices for a week, could he? So maybe he thought, wow, what a terrible thing. I daren't take that risk. And basically his religion was all outward. But it made me think about us, that sometimes even our spiritual activity needs to take a back seat to being kind, doesn't it? I suppose if I was coming along here, I hadn't thought about this, but there was a needy person in the way, I should stop and help them, and somebody else, Alex probably, would have stepped in and done a talk about this, because that's what should really take the priority. Certainly D.L. Moody, the famous evangelist, one morning he's at his desk looking out the window, and he saw a young man with a heavy case trudging along the 3 miles to the station. And the thought came to him, well, you could give him a lift to the station. And then he thought, no, don't be ridiculous. I'm doing an important work here. I'm preparing my sermon. I'm not a taxi driver. I'm a servant of God with a mandate to fulfill. But the thing was, he just couldn't fix his mind on his studies as long as he thought of that poor man and his case. But once he'd taken him to the station, there was no trouble at all. He got on with his work very easily. So appropriate deeds of kindness must always be up there on our agenda. That priest failed, and then the Levite, verse 32. Well, it looks like he came along, had a quick look, and then hurried off on the other side. And again, this is another thing I never thought about as a child. Maybe you are more thoughtful as children. But why did he have a look? What was he looking to see? And I guess one of the reasons was he might have been looking to see if this was another Levite or a priest or somebody. A lot of these Levites and priests actually lived in Jericho and travelled up and down to Jerusalem quite regularly. So he thought, well, maybe it's one of my friends. But the thing was, he wouldn't have had much success in seeing a lot about this man because his clothes were taken. And again, that's not something I never thought about as a child. But you can't tell very much about a person if they're, you know, you can't tell their status or their nationality, perhaps, if their clothes are removed. So he couldn't see very much. So sadly, he went away. Then the Samaritan comes along, verse 33. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. So again, he wouldn't have known very much. I guess the expectation was that the man was a Jew, because of where they were. But he couldn't have told, he certainly couldn't have told of known whether he was a rich man, because if he could have seen he was a rich man, he thought, well, maybe there's some reward in it for me. Or if he'd seen it was a Samaritan, he might think, well, that would go down well back home. But he couldn't see. But he doesn't worry about that at all, does he? He immediately decides to show kindness. There's no thought, thinking what's in it for me, no motivation of reward or anything else. And of course, we've got to be like that. But I sometimes wonder whether we are, sadly. Why are we kind? There's so many reasons for being kind that aren't totally pure. I was thinking, well, why am I kind to my family? Well, I'd like a peaceful life sometimes. I keep them happy. Or even in church, I suppose you're kind to people. We'd like to see the unity. You know, if we're going around disrupting unity of the church, we're all going to suffer for that. Or even out at school, at work, you know. Well, you think, well, the appraisals are coming up eventually. I better be kind to as many people as I can. So often there's ulterior motives. But certainly this man, this Samaritan, he hasn't got any ulterior motives. He sees the man immediately. He doesn't think about it or make any reckoning or considerations. He immediately shows him kindness. He took pity on him. I was thinking about how we need more kindness like that in the church. And I came across this quote. And it's a strange quote, because as I was reading it, it seemed to go on and on and on. I didn't quite know where, you sometimes wonder where a person's going. This is what he said. And it's a minister writing this, actually, which he said, "The sick, poor, foolish, weak, cynical, stubborn, critical, cutting, arrogant, aggressive, vain, discouraged, suspicious, pompous, hypocritical, and sarcastic are in every congregation." So that took me a bit surprised at the end. But then I thought, well, I hope it's not our church. But it did make me think. And what it made me think was that, am I one of the people actually creating the problems rather than one of the people who are curing the problems by kindness? Because obviously, we don't want the negative side, because that just even makes more difficulties for people. I suppose you'd have to redouble the kindness to somehow overcome these difficulties. But anyway, verse 34, what does the Samaritan do? He went to him, bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine, then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn and took care of him. So he's obviously excessively kind. Verse 35, he not only cares for him through the whole night, but next day he makes sure that everything's done for the man's recovery. Derek Prime puts it like this. He says, kindness takes care of details. It's interesting that Jesus didn't just say the man looked after him or the man helped him. It actually goes through all the details. What he did, you can imagine him gently and tenderly lifting him onto his donkey or whatever and looking after him and paying the money, how much money he paid. All these details are in there. And that's what Derek Prime says. Kindness takes care of details. Now, that set me thinking again. Because I don't know if you're like me. I suspect most of us. And you've sometimes thought, I know they meant to be kind, but I really wish they hadn't. You ever thought that? Someone's done something and it's caused you no end of hassle. And you think, well, they were already trying to be kind, but they didn't really think through. Because not everybody's the same, are we? We're all different. And my idea of something that's maybe kind, a present maybe, if someone gave me a weekend potholing or something for my birthday, I think, oh no, you know. So you've got, I suppose the point is you've got to think through our kindness. We've got to think through the details. We've got to think about the other person, and we've got to not only just do the big side of things, we've got to go into the specifics and care. And Jesus is very emphatic. We need to do the kind deeds, doesn't he? Verse 37, he says, go and do likewise. If I truly love my neighbour, I'll take care of all these little things. But also, it's tough, isn't it? Because there's risks involved, or it could be. This man might have thought, I'm a bit of a coward. I tell you, if I'd come round and seen someone beaten virtually to death, I'd be thinking of all the people hiding behind the rocks just about to come and get me. So it's a risky thing, you know. He might have wondered, but he doesn't seem to be concerned at all about that. So he helps him, doing acts of kindness, and not without risk. His very life may have been at risk. Is it wise also to show kindness to someone who might abuse the kindness? Because the Jews and Samaritans were at loggerheads, weren't they? At enmity, hostility. So you try and be kind to this man, he might hate you. Maybe he did hate. Maybe that, we don't know the end of the story, do we? Maybe he hated the Samaritan. Well, he did to start with. Perhaps that kindness won him over. I don't know. Here's an example of some Christians on one of the South Sea Islands. This is from Peyton's autobiography. And these Christians really felt a burden for one of their islanders who was a murderer. Quite a wretched man, actually. Dangerous man. And this is what they said. We said, we know that he has murdered several persons with his own hands and has taken part in the murder of others. Let us unite in daily prayer that the Lord would open his heart and change his conduct and teach him to love and follow what is good. And let us set ourselves to win Nazi for Christ. So that's their aim. They want to win him through kindness. At first he repelled them and sullenly held aloof. But their prayers never ceased, and their patient affection continued to grow. At last, after long waiting, Nazi broke down and cried to one of the teachers, I can oppose your Jesus no longer. If he can make you treat me like that, I yield myself to him and to you. I want him to change me too. I want a heart like that, a heart like that of Jesus. And I don't know, I'll ask probably later on if you've got any examples of kindness that have meant a lot to you. And it may be it was through somebody's kindness that you were actually converted. I think that's probably quite a common occurrence. But it's certainly through those people were determined to show kindness, and that led to this evil man's conversion. And we must be kind because God is kind. So our kindness is essentially based on Christ's kindness. And as you read through that parable, I don't know, again, going back to it as a child, it tends to be as a child you think about that story. But maybe you don't look at it in such a deep way. But one thing that stands out, really, is that we can see beyond that good Samaritan to the perfect Samaritan, Jesus Christ. He was even called, wasn't he, a Samaritan at one point. And because we were on that road, lying mortally wounded. And we can describe ourselves in many terms that are similar to that man. Had no hope, did we? We were there in our sin. This is the verse that came to my mind. Jan said, this is totally inappropriate for, because we've had a number of babies in the fellowship, but this is the one that struck me. I was trying to think of our situation, how helpless we were, like the man lying half dead on the road. And the verse that came to my mind was Ezekiel 16, verse 5. Do you remember that newborn baby thrown out and sure to die? And no eye pitied you, it says in Ezekiel 16, verse 5. But you were cast out on the open field, for you were abhorred on the day you were born. And that's where we were, weren't we? Not to help us. We couldn't do anything to help ourselves. And we're spiritually dead until Jesus comes, takes us, cleanses us, cares for us, restores us. He's the perfect good Samaritan, rescuing us from our sins, raising us when we were spiritually dead. And of course, Christ has done far more than what we have in this parable. Our need was much greater. His sacrifice, his generosity, his determination, his self-giving love, his incomparable kindness, they reached the heavens. God, there's a verse in Luke 6:35, God is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Now that Samaritan was kind even to those who hated him. There was that enmity. But of course Jesus is kind to us in our enmity. Kind to the ungrateful and the evil. So that's true kindness. Infinitely beyond our understanding. And I think we should be overwhelmed by it. Now, it's hard, isn't it, when you've known these things for so much. But to actually be moved, just, I don't know, maybe as you sing hymns or you're reading some of your verses, that you're actually overwhelmed by the kindness. Why should God show mercy to me and compassion to me? Again, I was reading about Andrew Bonner. I think Derek Prime mentions it probably in his book. And he said this man was so moved by the vastness of Christ's love that he felt choked. It was a physical thing. God's power, God's kindness was so overpowering, he could hardly bear it. It fell upon him. He felt its force. And I think, well, do we feel that? Maybe we do at times, especially when we've gone through some trial and Christ helped us, or some unexpected difficulty and Christ was there. And you can almost feel that Jesus loved me. I remember just singing I'm Forgiven, that song. One occasion, I've sung it lots of times, but the one occasion, it sort of had such a powerful effect. Oh, we're forgiven. Why should we be forgiven? Why should God show us mercy? Why should he raise us up when we were half dead? So it's his kindness is the motivation for our kindness, isn't it? What he's done for us, we need to do for others. Now, Matthew Henry does a little bit. I wanted to quote this because I think he puts it very well. This is what he said. This parable is applicable to another purpose. What he's saying is that the main reason is to teach us to show love and kindness to our neighbour. And our neighbour is not just the man near us. It's even our enemies. It's to show that there's a breadth to we should show kindness to all. But there's another reason, he says, that the parable is there to set forth the kindness and love of Jesus. We were like that poor, distressed traveller. Satan, our enemy, had robbed us, stripped us, wounded us. Such is the mischief of sin. We were by nature more than half dead. He says we were twice dead. Dead in trespasses and sins. Unable to help ourselves, without any strength. The law of Moses, like the priest and the Levite, what do? They looked, didn't they? They couldn't help. The law of God can't help us. It just condemns us. Has no compassion on us, gives us no relief, passes by on the other side, as having neither pity nor power to help us. But then comes the blessed Jesus, that good Samaritan. He has compassion on us. He binds up our bleeding wounds, pours in not oil and wine, but something infinitely more wonderful, his own blood. He takes care of us, bids us put all the expenses of our cure to his account. And all this, though he didn't have to, was he? He wasn't a man. He came and took our nature and died in our place. This magnifies the riches of his love and obliges us all to say, and this is the key point, I think, how much are we indebted and what shall we render? That's true, isn't it? How much are we indebted and what shall we render? Christ's been so kind to us, it's not only an example, but it's our motivation. So we're obliged to be kind. So what will we render? What should we render? What's our response? As we sort of try and wrap things up a bit. How kind will we be? Are there any practical thoughts we can just gather from these verses? Well, here's the most important one, I think. That we must be convinced that it's important. So it is you're absolutely convinced of something that your life will change. So if we think, well, we all agree it's important to be kind. But if we get to the stage where we absolutely think, well, it's so vital that I'm kind. And then if it moves up to a higher plane or much higher up our agenda, then hopefully we'll be more on the lookout for these things. A colleague of mine at school, just the other day, last Friday, she was organising a trip for my tutor group. And she came to me the day before because they were going to a Sikh temple. And she was a bit puzzled and a bit concerned. And she said one of the parents didn't like the fact that their child would be expected to bow to something or other in the temple as a mark of respect. Now, she wanted to know, well, what's all the fuss about? You know, you're just doing a bit of politeness, bowing, nodding your head to whatever it was they had to do. And she couldn't see the problem. But she did want to understand. She's quite a kind teacher. She wanted to understand what the problem was. But she couldn't really take it too seriously. And so she came up to me, which was quite nice. And so I just pointed out, I don't know if I said the right thing, but I said, well, in previous generations, people were burned alive for similar sort of things. And things that other people didn't think were very important, but for a matter of principle, they wouldn't bow down to the idols or even the mass, wouldn't partake of the mass and these sort of things. And some things that seem small and insignificant, even ridiculous, in our generation, what have we got? We've got liberal-minded, tolerant, believe anything you like, multicultural age, and things aren't very important, really. Matters of principle. But doesn't mean to say they're not important. And then I mentioned Daniel. I don't know why I thought of Daniel, but I said he went to the lion's den over something that didn't worry very many other people. And later I overheard her talk to another teacher. I was going off to my lesson after break, and she was telling another teacher all about Daniel. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So at least something I said made some affect her in some way. And then next day she came up to me, and she said, look, her whole thinking had been changed. And that boy, she decided that he wouldn't go on the trip at all, and she arranged for him to go on another trip. And what had happened was she'd come to see just how important the issue was to that boy and his family. She thought it was nothing, but she suddenly saw it was important. And so because of that, she was prepared to change all her plans and everything else. And that's sort of illustrating what I'm trying to say, is that when we see things differently, when we see things as important, we'll change. But also, the other reason I mentioned that is because I think we do need something of that kind of martyr spirit, or Daniel spirit, that they were prepared to lay down their lives for what they believed to be important. And I think, well, if we believe something to be important, we need to take it seriously. And if we believe that kindness is absolutely fundamentally important, then we're going to take it much more seriously and be prepared to take what, or do what it costs to pay the sacrifice, however much it may be. We must begin by looking at our hearts. Do we have the spirit of kindness? The sort of thing that inevitably, that man inevitably, it was almost, it happened automatically, put ourselves out for others in need. Do we know what, do we appreciate what the word neighbour means? It's a very broad term. And do we give expecting nothing in return? He didn't calculate, he just gave. So that's, ours should be a true sacrificial, thoughtful kindness. And I think that's the teaching of the passage. And how do we put it into practice? Well, we must begin by focusing on Jesus. By seeing Christ's ultimate kindness, we're motivated. And it's on God's kindness we model our kindness. So I think we need to pray for better hearts. We need to look to Jesus. We need to listen. And we need particularly to listen to that conclusion, don't we? Jesus said, go and do likewise. It's a command. So something we must do. Okay, I've said more than I probably should have done. Here's a few questions you might want to think about.